Crypto Explorer. It's a podcast by Sygnum Bank, designed to bring you closer to the world of crypto and to the future of finance. I'm your host, as always, Alia Dasgupta, and today I'm very excited to be joined in our studio by Luca Mueller, who is a returning guest on the show and is widely credited with being the man who brought the crypto valley to Switzerland, and also the founder of MME, and Firas Havak, who is following his time in the traditional world at JP Morgan, is now leading compliance at Sygnum Bank. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. We're going to be talking about MiCA and the changing face of regulation in the crypto world. And there's a lot to unbox. But before we dive into it, we do a quick round of introductions. Maybe Luca, you want to kick us off?
Thank you, Leah. I mean, you've said nearly everything. You know, I can add some some private elements. You know, I'm married, have four kids, and I really enjoy whatever is around digitalization and finance. I love it. It's my passion. And my passion is more specifically in whatever is around blockchain and DLT. I think this is a revolution ongoing, and I really love and I see it as a privilege that I can actually participate in this new development.
Amazing. And Firas?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. Also a pleasure to join the podcast that I review on a regular basis. I'm currently the head of compliance here. I have been here since August of last year. Transitioned over from the traditional banks, starting off at Deutsche Bank, then eventually moving to JP Morgan. And during the COVID period, I really finally tackled the topic of cryptos. I used to follow the kind of mentality of Jamie Dimon, probably, that believing that everything is kind of dodgy and you hear all the headlines and it's really hard to discern. But the more I delved into it, the more it captivated me. We see the typical fintechs like, Revolut, TransferWise, etc., really gaining traction. But to me, it really seemed like they were becoming outdated as well. And that the DLT sphere even adds a lot more clarity that people within compliance would pursue. And it really caught my attention, obviously created to myself a certain checklist I would be looking for. What do I expect in an innovative firm to really set the standard with? Coming from the traditional banking sphere, I'm obviously a bit more conservative, but also embarking on this journey really requires really the combination of both. And that ultimately led me to Sygnum being the places that really combines both worlds in an innovative way, but also that pursues our topic of today, regulation and setting a standard for the market. And this is what really interested me and presented an interesting challenge for my further pursuits.
Fantastic. Glad to have you at Sygnum and on the show today, because we've seen the headline everywhere, right? That MiCA is coming and MiCA is going to change everything. And, you know, now crypto is starting a new adventure because, you know, we have MiCA in place. And I think on a very high level, it's good to understand, what does the MiCA regulatory framework mean? Why is it so important for crypto regulation in the EU?
I mean, Firas and I, we know that being in the crypto field is not only fun, it is also pain. And the pain comes from unregulated, unsecure jurisdictions, you know, and hence we appreciate and embrace this development, which is presently happening in the European Union, which sets standards, adds to legal certainty. And this is what we need in this space, you know, and in a way which still allows a room of piloting and pioneering. So we need to have a room that we can work and further develop. But in addition, we also want to have what is settled, what is clear, that we have a, let's say, a more like calm waters on this side. And I think MiCA, before diving into all the details, MiCA is bringing more comfort in the space. And hence, it is a huge advantage for us being in the space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I could add to it is essentially provides us with a level playing field in terms of addressing some of the uncertainties that many of us were cognizant of. I mean, coming from the traditional landscape as well, you have certain concepts which are implicit, but which remain to be uncertainties in the crypto sphere or in the DLT sphere. How do you tackle the topic of, you know, investor protection? What are some sort of expectations from, let's say, a bank like ourselves within Signum or as a service provider? But it really bears the additional nuance of how do you even classify certain tokens? How do you classify certain aspects, which the MiCA regulation really pursues, and really getting this core understanding in line, thereby enabling business at the end of the day. Okay, I may be overly pro regulation because it gives me comfort from a compliance perspective, but it is also a pursuit of sustainability and creating trust. How do you really pursue, how do you integrate technology into everyday life? You need to give the retail or the wider public some comfort associated to that solution. And that regulation is one step in the right direction of giving the wider audience, the wider public, the investing public, some comfort that whatever action they take with this new technology, that there are certain expectations to the service providers, exactly. But also certain expectations what can have or what one can have. And this is really, as Luca mentioned, calms the waters a little bit. I mean, would you want to drink a glass of water where you're at risk of being splashed all the way and then only have a sip? No, you want to have the whole glass of water. So that's the...
Yeah, and I think what you said, Firas, I think one of the radical elements of MiCA is the acknowledgement of a crypto asset. So there is something like a crypto asset. And this is what other jurisdictions like the US are lacking. So because the US, they try to apply their existing laws to whatever is around. And I think once you actually acknowledge that there is a crypto asset as a new type, and MiCA makes it also clear that the traditional financial instruments are not regulated under MiCA because they are already rules in place for it, even if they are using DLT technology, but it is really separated. And I think this is one of the major positive structural elements of this new regulation. We will probably come back later to the definitions, which I think are very good. We did that in Switzerland in 2018 because we saw the need actually to do that. We in our law firm, we started very early in 2014 because we said, if you start to define and work out the technology or functionality difference of each application, then you can actually adopt the right compliance, AML, risk management tools. But first, you have to understand what is the purpose, the functionality of whatever token or application is, and then you apply the regulations. And I think that their approach, that they actually first start to acknowledge that there is a crypto asset and then to add definitions which then lead to specific rules, I think this is the absolute right approach. And also differentiate between what is the financial instrument for which we have the traditional regulations and what is new.
Great. I mean, that's a great high-level overview, guys. But maybe it's also it's helpful to understand what does it really change for players in the space right now? So what can players do today that they couldn't do yesterday? Or how does it change perhaps their model of operation?
I think the primary objective of it, or the primary instructive nature of it, is really formalizing a certain process, formalizing the expectations to a service that is being provided or has been provided in some shape or another, but now is being standardized, i.e. improving the competitive landscape, but also equalizing and the information provided to the consumers in one shape or another. So if you are a token provider, if you're issuing tokens, you know, you need to have a consistent set of white papers, you need some underlying documentation and disclosure requirements, which are implicit by MiFID and by kind of equating or defining the underlying services in either a financial service or a financial instrument, you get closer to really adding that transparency that adds that comfort to that investor in order to make an informed decision, to make an informed comparison. Now, obviously, I've seen many of the discussions around MiCA being how certain things are still undefined. You still have that obfuscation of decentralized finance and some nuances which are still unaddressed there. But it's a step into the right direction that gives people the clarity of terms of, do I need a license? Is what I'm offering, does it necessitate this licensing or this authorization? Is what I'm doing really something that has wider implications in the region, or is it really something very specific to that individual location that you're operating in? And I think that really equalizes it. It really sets a framework and underlying understanding of what needs to be done and adding a level playing field. And I think the biggest takeaway for me has been in the last few years as I explored the industry and looked for my own personal checklist, what do I seek as a service taker, but also then as a service provider, is really what is the elemental protection given to me where What can I do to those service providers? Are they acting like in the Wild West? Can they just cut off the service 1 week later, 2 weeks later, 2 years later? How much faith can I have in that process? And I think it's that faith component that really plays into this at the end of the day. It's a long-winded answer. It really remains to be seen to what effect it has on the wider landscape. Many jurisdictions have set out their standards, almost setting the stage for MiCA. Now it is really up for those various service providers, exchanges, and applications to kind of adopt it and set the standard. And it's really learning by doing, as you have in any case. I mean, in the anti-money laundering directives, you've had numerous ones. 10 years ago, there was an anti-money laundering directive, but you had KYCs being no longer than 5 or 10 pages. That is a thing of the past. Now you have numerous documents, numerous expectations. And obviously, this is as you progress, as you learn how to deal with putting things into practice. MiCA is the first step along the way. And now it remains to be seen, has that equality or that equation played out as expected or not?
Yeah, as Vera said, you know, MiCA is laying the grounds for the ecosystem, and the ecosystem consisting out of the users, the service providers, and the developers, you know. And I welcome the rules for the issuing process, which gives certain guarantees for the users slash investors, but also for us as service providers, as crypto asset service providers, because we have better and know-how and information on integrating these issued tokens into our services. And it's also it's comfort and also leveling the play field for the service providers, because, and this is something which is missing in Switzerland, they under MiCA create a new type of license which we don't have. So in Switzerland, you either have an SRO membership, which is not a type of license, but which allows you to exchange and to a certain extent also custodize crypto assets. But if you want to provide additional services, you're very close to actually need of a banking license. And what we have seen, and in Singapore, it has already been done, you know, with the payment service license, we are lacking one license type, which is between a simple SRO membership and the banking license. And this is what they're doing. And I think it's a good development. It's a good development for the whole ecosystem, because then it gets also for us easier to exchange and trade, and it reduces our counterparty risk in the whole ecosystem. So hence, it is an advantage that we have this new license type in the European Union.
Super interesting. And also, when you sort of compare it to what Switzerland did with the legal framework that they put in place, which was, you know, lauded as like the best of the best in class at the time, and now of course there's evolution in it. And now you're talking also about a specific license for crypto providers, and I think a lot of people may be familiar with a VASP license, and that is a type of license that people, you know, could apply for when they were working with virtual assets. And now how does that sort of play into what NECA enables. Do those licenses still hold, and or do they change in some form, or how does this work?
Yeah, WASP license in Switzerland does not exist. So that's very, very often, you know, people talk about the WASP license, you know, but if, ultimately it's just a SRO membership. And it's an indirect licensing process via a licensed self-regulating organization. So this is exactly what we're missing. You know, we don't have a really WASP license here in Switzerland. Now, in the European Union, under MiCA, they are implementing such a new licensing regime, which, as I said, I highly welcome. If we will go into the same direction into Switzerland, I don't know yet. But I hear something out of what you said. You know, we were pioneering in Switzerland our regulatory system, and we were actually ahead of the crypto, let's say, regulation. Yes, that was. And I think is Europe, the European Union, is gaining grounds here. And we need to be very careful that we're not losing these grounds. But there are two things to be at the forefront. One is regulation, which is the most important one. And secondly, is also the authorities, how they apply it. I mean, that's also, are they applying the rules in a friendly, open, technology-minded way, or very conservative, restrictive? This is seems to be, this remains to be seen, you know, how it will be done. But it's, I hope that we will have a crypto-friendly, technology-friendly application of this new law in the European Union.
And I think what I can add to this is really, MiCA is a reflection of the better understanding of the authorities, the regulators, and just the various counterparties.
Definitely.
And if I look back to 2017, Luca has already been deep into the crypto world by then. I was still being explained to what a blockchain is. And I think many of the colleagues and counterparts in the regulators also still dwelled with that trivial definition of what is the blockchain. Other people were already dealing with the use cases, and Switzerland was already dealing back then already with the definition, the various classes that you had. And I think one point you made very early on, Ali, is that some jurisdictions outside of the EU, outside of Switzerland, are still trying to bring in crypto DLT-specific considerations into existing laws. Switzerland has done the same, essentially, but has been much more successful in doing so because they addressed many of the necessary underlying nuances, which some of the others exactly. haven't. So you still have that differentiation between the various jurisdictions. And I think in terms of the WASP license and the recognition, and speaking from a Swiss and EU perspective, you still have that discussion sometimes. Do you recognize the regulations of another jurisdiction? Is it sufficient if they're adequately regulated in Germany, in Luxembourg, or in France to be active in Switzerland and vice versa? So I think this is the next step in terms of finding that equality between the various jurisdictions. Obviously, the biggest question is the equation being driven by the US authorities, the SEC, CFTC, etc. But I think we're all converging into one understanding with the utility tokens. How do you deal with those? Money payment tokens is an established fact. It's a way of transmitting funds across the border. So you obviously have to bear in mind certain things, but many of the other aspects have not. Now, a question that I would ask myself is under MiCA, which I still need to explore, and where it's really undefined is, utility tokens, would you have that expectation to record phone calls if you were to trade in utility tokens? Now, implicitly, you would assume, yeah, if you're a trader and you're taking an order from a client, obviously the likelihood of you receiving information by virtue of that order puts you at an informational advantage over the wider public. Now, obviously, that is going into a lot of detail, but it really remains to be seen of what is the expectation in terms of addressing conflicts of interest, you know, the disclosure requirements. And I think the EU regulations have always been out there to protect the investing public, to also protect the financial securities, financial market space as a whole, but in bringing crypto and DLT into that financial marketplace and just really assuring that there is a fine line being drawn in terms of the requirements. Now, Switzerland
remaining to be in the forefront. I think there are some fintech licenses which have been pursued, which one could argue could be enhanced or not going forward. Are they even applicable to the DLT crypto world? Probably not, because there are other nuances to bear in mind. But let's see. I mean, the Swiss regulators and the Swiss authorities have been very innovative and been very proactive. Even during my stint at the previous banks, they have been very engaged on this topic.
Interesting. I mean, both of you also, I think, referenced the way regulations are applied and respected across different jurisdictions, right? So, of course, Switzerland has its approach, the EU has its approach, but of course, we've seen, you know, VARA in Dubai and now Hong Kong coming out with their own regulatory framework. Singapore has always been relatively active. And how do you see now, I guess, the comparison between how Mika operates versus these other players in the market? And, you know, for better or for worse, what are things to sort of watch out for?
I think what Fira said is true. We see a harmonization. So now it gets more and more clear what kind of functionality these tokens can have. Like, are they simple payment, asset-backed payment tokens, are they utilities, or on the other side, financial instruments. And I think this is getting more and more harmonized. And Mika is one proof of it, you know, what we have done in Switzerland. And harmonization, international harmonization, helps the cross-border business, because then you start to talk about the same things, you know. And when I see what Singapore is doing, I would say they have their own way to do it. They are at the forefront, but comparing now the definitions, they are not so far away from what actually has been now defined under the European Union regime. And I think this path of harmonization among the different regulators in the world has to go on and will go on, because it's so obvious, you know, and it's also technology driven. And you've seen that as well in the AML side with the FATF, which is a non-government organization driving the harmonization on the application of anti-money laundering rules all over the world. And it helped actually ultimately to protect the business against money laundering. And also it helped the business to interact also in a global space. And I think this is an aspect which is now being reaffirmed with Mika. And I think it will go on in the future. From the detailed cross-border technology aspects, you know, to what extent the Swiss regulated, you know, entity can provide services in another jurisdiction, this is a complete other area. Here, a lot of policy elements, you know, are playing into and are getting more and more relevant. And of course, you know, we as Swiss, not being a member of the European Union, we do have to apply for a license in the European Union. We cannot actually profit from the passporting. So these are the limits which still apply. Are they really good, or it's more like a political thing, you know? And because when I read through the regulation, MiCA regulation, and I saw what we, for example, in Signum already have in place, we go much further already, you know. And Firas, you know, if I see a lot of things which they now implement, we have done from the inception of Signum, you know, it's absolutely clear. We said our whole compliance and risk management scheme is based on the definition of each of the tokens which we serve, which we custodize, and which we also transfer, and for which we also give asset management advice. So this approach and this clear functionalities, because, you know, we even use our own internal terms like BCP1, BCP2, BCP3, you know, and if you look at what they did now, it's actually using our definitions. So we have the asset tokens as one, the utilities on the other side, and the three, this the NFTs, which they explicitly exclude now under the regulation, which confirms that our thinking was the right one at the beginning, you know.
It is definitely a battle testing of what we've done in terms of finding a sustainable approach going forward. And I think the observations of the last 3 years, 4 years since I think in between the two bull runs were really the highlighting factor in terms of what should be pursued now. What is Hong Kong doing? What is Dubai doing in terms of their regulatory policy making and approach towards the crypto industry? Obviously, the primary driver can be considered as being attracting new business, attracting innovators, attracting entrepreneurs. So as Luca mentioned, much of it can be political, but the other aspect is also just taking advantage of, you know, the lack of regulatory clarity in other jurisdictions, really bring in investments, really giving a grounds for everyone to kind of set a foothold and set the standard. I think Dubai or the United Arab Emirates are really trying to be a beacon for the DLT world, similar to what Switzerland has done with the Crypto Valley. So everybody is trying to be at the forefront of new technology, and really taking advantage of where there is lacking understanding, where you would typically have found innovators and entrepreneurs. So it remains to be seen. It remains to be battle tested as well. That is how I mm-hmm. perceive it in terms of contrasting the various jurisdictions.
It's actually super heartening, right? So I'm not a lawyer by any stretch of imagination, but what you guys are effectively saying is that the approach that most regulators take to different sorts of crypto assets has largely been unified around this utility versus security versus payment setup. And if everyone more or less lands in the same understanding of the asset class, then you actually come to a almost global legal framework for crypto assets. I mean, I know if it's very early days and that's far away, but is that a reasonable takeaway from what you and Luca just said?
Yes. I mean, this is we discussed that already in the very, very early days, and we pushed for definition, and we pushed also Switzerland that we should have actually a first understanding of these kind of the different definition of all these crypto applications. And it starts with the definition. Really, it starts with the definition. And again, you know, I said, you know, there are indications that there is a these definitions are getting unified, harmonized. But on the other hand, we need to be clear that one of the biggest, largest market is still not following this path. So, and you see, it's their hands, the regulators' hands in the US, they are bound by the existing laws and the existing practice. So I don't blame them. You know, it's actually the parliament which has to start to work to give them what the European Union did. You know, that they were laying the regulatory grounds to set up the practice of these each of the regulators. At the moment, the SEC, for example, they have to apply what they have. And it's difficult because it's a very old practice. They have to apply to a very new technology. So yeah. I think once the US is getting into, actually it's moving into this direction, which has been implemented now in the European Union, in Switzerland, in Southeast Asia. And I think once they are there, then we can actually start to talk about the unification or harmonization.
Or some kind of FATF for crypto.
But yes. on the other side of the coin, I think it is, and I made this example to my nephews just the other day. It's always easy to give somebody a rule book on how to spend their day, but it really is up to them on how they actually proceed with it. Do they have a shower first? Do they first have a coffee? It's really what you make of it. How do you mature while you have that book in hand? Now, the question is, now we have all those expectations from the regulators, or at least the initial expectations. You have, you know, battle-tested practices. You've seen how you can gain the confidence and trust of the wider public. You've seen how you can get the comfort of the institutional clients. You've started to bring in the use cases. But now the next step is, what should you be doing and when is it already an overkill? Now, in terms of the regulations, I've actually challenged some of my peers at another panel, and there were some counterparties or counterparties from the Austrian regulator there. I told them, listen, I always equate it to me having chocolate at home. I know if I have a cupboard full of chocolate, I have no discipline, I'll eat it all. Now, in the blockchain world, you have a node everywhere, you have a wallet address everywhere, and you have so many use cases which are so complex and so interesting. You have that transparency inherent in the technology. Now, if you equate it to the traditional world in terms of what you can do and what you should have done. Now, in the traditional world, I give you $100, you go to the supermarket, you buy yourself a sandwich, then you take what's left and you go buy yourself a coffee. Are you identified all along the way? Do you have to show your ID if you buy yourself a sandwich or not? I mean, if you could, and it's super easy, you know, just flash a chip in your arm or something, then sure. You could go into an ever-ending debate in terms of data privacy and all that side. But now in the blockchain world, you have the capability, you have service providers out there identifying all the wallets along the chain, you have chain analysis mechanisms, you really could go back 100 nodes and really see what has that one Bitcoin done. Now, if you equate it to the traditional world, which is our objective in terms of equating the rules and regulations to the crypto dimension, but everything that is being expected of the crypto world goes above and beyond, you'd start to have to ask yourself, is it too much in certain aspects? Should we just not take everything step by step? Should there be a risk-based approach? A compliance officer's favorite word, but it's also the word that causes the worst nightmares, because you could always go more. You can always get a lot more comfort, and you should do in some cases. But really, that capability of identifying something, I always equate it to the fact that me having chocolate at home, I could eat myself to death. I'll probably get diabetes at the end of it. But it was yummy along the way, but did it really fulfill its purpose or not? So this is just the provocative thought I always put out there. And you, if the primary argumentation then becomes, okay, we've brought in the classical rule set into the crypto world. Now, how does it contrast to the fintechs? The payment providers like, I don't know, Revolut, TransferWise, PayPal, etc. You'd start to realize the existing rules also need updating there, because they are providing real-time payment solutions. They have some sort of settlement scheme, which is almost equivalent to blockchain, not as efficient or transparent, but you could really start reinventing the wheel along the way. So it is now a curious time, an exciting time in terms of seeing how everything plays out to the next few months as people start to implement the MiCA regulation and all the other regulations, but also maybe adding a bit of fresh air to the whole regulatory landscape. Sorry, I went off on a monologue there.
but you can, we can hear your passion about it, you know, that's good, you know, and this is, you know, this is my lifetime experience, always being at the forefront of developing the law to the, let's say, adapting the law to the technology and vice versa. And yes, I experienced the same, you know, because of all these rumors and sometimes true rumors going around, you know, Bitcoin being, or other crypto tokens being misused for money laundering purposes, we were in the focus, and that was the battlefield, you know. And so we had to be more compliant than even the traditional market. And if very often, you know, people still do not see the advantages of this full transparency in transaction, which we have, you know, which is to a certain extent also a disadvantage. What we have seen, you know, if we transact in the market, you know, from all the regulators in the world, you know, more or less they can see what we are doing. So it's much more transparent. It's and I think, coming back to your point, Firas, yes, there will not only be a need to adapt the new standards for us, but also for the other sector as well, of course, and we might also have to consider or to see where we now overshoot a little bit, you know. But that's the reason why we need brains like you now helping.
Wow, this is indeed amazing. There's so many more questions. I think I haven't addressed even half of my question list that I came to this podcast with. But I think we managed to actually cover quite a lot of interesting ground, and hopefully it was also, you know, helpful to our listeners. And for our listeners, if you've got questions, please write into podcast@signum.com. And Luca, Firas, thank you both so much for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure digging into Mika and seeing also now we're at this point where we're going to see it unfold and we're going to see so much more come from it. And it's an exciting time to be in crypto, I think. Thank you both.
Thank you, Lee.